I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Is hair a material?
Are biscuits a material?
Are crystals a material?
Is plastic a material?
Is porridge a material?
Can gases be a material?
Are eggs a material?
Is water a material?
What do you call everything that isn't a material?
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at your question.
And yet you continue to do so.
Hello, and welcome back to Handmade, the making podcast with real talk about materials. As always, I'm your host, Anna Pajaisky, and this episode I talk to Lucy Rogers, who, in her own words, is an engineer by training, but now is more of an inventor with a sense of fun. As you'll hear in this episode, Lucy is really a passionate proponent of the maker movement. So I'm pretty sure that we could have talked about pretty much any material for this episode. But when I asked Lucy beforehand which material she wanted to focus on, she immediately replied with wood. So I was super excited to sit down with Lucy and record this conversation during the UK coronavirus lockdown. And I started by asking Lucy, what does it mean to be an inventor with a sense of fun?
So that means I solve people's problems who have specific problems in an area they're not really expecting. So I have made a concertina that breaks when you pull it too far apart for a comedy band. I have made mini mannequins for a dressmaker, and I've made gold boots that change colour when you tweet them. So projects aren't really patentable, and I put most of my ideas out in the world as open source. But I'm also the Royal Academy of Engineers visiting professor of engineering creativity and communications at Brunel University.
Cool. What does that entail?
I am helping the students and the staff communicate more effectively and be more creative. I have found that creativity in engineering isn't often encouraged, because to get to the British standard or the ISO standard of quality, you have to make the same product the same way every time. And so if you just tweak a little bit, you're not making the same product the same time and the same way. And so people complain about that. And so you're actually discouraged from being creative in many, many fields of engineering. And I'm trying to sort of like put out, and even in school, we're also discouraged from that. It's creativity is much harder to mark. So, yeah, we often stick to the 2 + 2 = 4, and it always equals 4. Therefore, it's easy to mark. So I'm going a little bit more down the creative line, and also communication skills, written, spoken. Engineers are not renowned for being able to communicate well with non-engineers. So that's what that's all about.
Oh, amazing. And so you identify as a maker, which kind of sits right slap bang in the middle of what you were just describing, like the kind of technical side of the engineering, but then I suppose the craft side of sort of making stuff with your hands, right?
Yes, I like to make the thing that I've just invented, the prototype, whatever. Yeah.
So what first sparked your interest in making?
My family are makers. My mum was an apprentice florist. My dad had been an apprentice carpenter joiner. My grandfather was a clockmaker and a boat builder. So making was always all around me. And when I was small, I could see my dad making things out of wood. I could see my mum, and she's very creative and would do embroidery. And so both me and my brother just made things. We always made things. And I remember specifically asking for a carpentry set when I was 7.
No way.
It didn't have anything sharp in it, though.
Okay, I was just going to ask, sharp knives and axes isn't normally what you give to a 7-year-old.
A junior hacksaw.
Cool.
A small screwdriver. It did have a hammer and some nails, and some G-clamps.
Brilliant. Can you remember some of the earliest things you made?
I remember making a birdhouse with my dad.
Wow,
and
that's cool.
We collected a whole load of twigs and cut them all to length. We must have nailed them all together.
Brilliant. So the material that we are going to be discussing today is wood. Because you said to me that wood was sort of your first love in materials and making. So what was it about wood that really kind of caught your eye initially?
I think initially it was I could make something with these things, and I could make big things. I could make dens in the garden or the birdhouse. And it had so many uses. And you saw it everywhere. You know, in the attic, you could see it in the rafters. You could see boats being built out of it. It was all everywhere, but also the smell, the smell of cut wood.
So from your 7-year-old carpentry set, then, where did you go with wood after that?
I probably didn't really do much other than DIY. And my dad helped me a lot with my first house. I remember cutting noggins. Noggins are... If I can remember right, so you've got the rafters, the beams that go across your ceiling, and then in between them, I assume it was either to stop it twisting or for something to actually hammer your plasterboard up to.
Okay.
See, I can't quite remember the technical terms, but I remember we made noggings. I did an awful lot of DIY making tables. At one place I built a garage, with all the rafters were wood.
Wow.
Another place, we had this huge shed, I completely revamped it, panelled the whole of the inside, stripped all the floorboards. So, a lot of wood stuff. And it wasn't until I was about 30 that I started wood turning.
Okay.
So probably younger than that, actually, because I'd just finished my PhD. And it's like, there's a void in my life now where I was focusing on this PhD for so long.
Yeah.
And my local college had a 6-week turn a bowl course. So I signed up for that. And then the teacher said, if you signed up for the 6-month City and Guilds in wood turning, it would cost like £50 more. This was back in the days when further education and craft skills were not as expensive as they are now. And so I did the 6-month City and Guilds in wood turning. Absolutely loved it.
Brilliant.
I've got a lot of round things now.
So that's working wood on a lathe. Can you describe that for any listeners that aren't familiar with how to do that?
So I've got a lathe. So it's got a motor at one end and... you stick a bit of wood onto the end of the motor, and so the motor is going horizontally. So you're turning it as it's turning, it's coming towards you. This lump of wood is coming towards you and spinning, and so you get a chisel and you stick it on the lump of wood, not too far, otherwise it all falls off and it can ping across the room. And little by little, you use a chisel to take bits off this spinning piece of wood, and you can make bowls or spindles for your banisters. I've made a standard lamp, I've made a stool, I've made some goblets.
Nice.
So anything that has a round thing can be made on a lathe.
Circularly symmetric, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can do offset, but I've never adventured that far.
That sounds quite advanced.
Yeah.
So what materials properties do you need to take into account when you're working with wood, let's say on a lathe?
You have to see where the grain is. So if you want the grain to go along the axis of the lathe, so you're actually taking up when you yeah, you're taking it off with the grain or against the grain, and that will depend on which tool you want to use, and how it comes off. Will it come off in, will the bits come off in chips, or will they come off in a nice long, a slither, like as if you're using a hand plane and you can make those big curly shavings.
Nice. Peeling an apple.
Peeling an apple, yes. You can get one long thing, or will it come in lots of little chips?
Yeah.
And then go everywhere. So you've got to look at that. Also, how dry the wood is. So I cut down a piece of conifer, a fir tree in the garden, and took it in, put it on the lathe, and I was sopping wet by the time I'd finished it. It didn't feel wet in my hands. But you start putting the chisel in, and the amount of water that is in a piece of green wood, newly cut piece of wood, is really quite amazing. And the thing also with the green wood, green wood being the term we use for just cut down, is it will twist. So I made this goblet, and the whole idea is, as I made it wet, when it dries out, as long as it doesn't crack, the whole the stem will twist, and you won't be able to work out how it was made because it won't be the symmetrical that it would be on a lathe. Mine was obviously a very straight piece of wood because it dried straight.
Oh, that's lucky. So, yeah, do you have to take that into account then, the sort of shrinkage that the wood will do?
The shrinkage, yeah. Will it crack? How much can you do in one day? And if you're putting your tool or your chisel onto the piece of wood, it will dry the piece of wood. And so as it's getting hotter with friction,
interesting.
It'll actually dry. And so you might end up, if you've got a very fine lip of a bowl, for example, you may end up putting cracks in because you're heating it too much. So sometimes you just have to stop it, leave it for a while, and then come back again.
That's interesting.
Do some more. But otherwise, if you don't use green wood, you'll probably use seasoned wood, which hasn't got quite so many foibles as the green wood. But again, it's harder to do.
Yeah.
Green wood is like carving butter. And the dry wood is, a little bit, you have to put more oomph into it.
Like carving cheese.
Yes.
To extend that analogy. So your background is in mechanical engineering, is that right?
Yes.
That's what you studied at uni. Did you ever study wood sort of kind of formally at uni?
I don't believe I did. No, we did some bits and structures, but I think that was more working out what a moment was rather than, you had an ideal beam.
Yeah.
Yes, a beam that was straight and true and, the same all the way along.
Which is not the case for a piece of wood, right? Because there's always little imperfections and knots.
Yeah, there's always a knot somewhere.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was speaking to a dendrochronologist on this podcast a couple of months ago, and I was saying to her, she was saying how nice it is to be able to collaborate with all sorts of different engineers and scientists and climatologists and stuff to do with wood. But in material science, wood didn't come up at all in the formal curriculum. Yeah. Which is to me so crazy because we use wood everywhere. But I suppose it's just because it's a natural material. It's a little bit sort of chaotic and a bit unknown, and you can't really put proper graphs to it, or you have to make too many approximations, I guess.
Well, I think we're back at the creativity bit where actually you've just got to look at it. You've got to have an eye for it.
Right. Engineers aren't really people to go with the flow. Maybe they just want the number to be the number and that's it.
That'd probably work.
Yeah.
Doesn't really work for bridges.
Yeah.
you don't really make cogs or moving things out of wood.
Right. Why not?
For all those reasons. If you can imagine looking, if you just cut down a tree and you're looking at the stump and you can see all the rings, if you made cog teeth around the edge of that stump, where the rings are the weak points, and so actually you'd be shearing off all the teeth as it went round. So that wouldn't be the strongest way. So if you do it, and cartwheels were done in this way, you actually have to cut bits of wood and then stick them together again, or glue, or somehow structure them together. So you're always using the best bit of the wood in the perfect way.
Right, interesting. So you would have to cut all of those little spokes around the wheel. That would have to be along the grain of the wood, so that it was in the strongest possible formation.
Yeah, and then the hub of the wheel.
Right.
Again, you'd have to do along the grain.
Yeah.
So you do a bit along the grain with a bit of the curve in, and then another bit and another bit.
That's so interesting. Have you ever made a cartwheel?
No. No, but I've seen quite a few.
Yeah.
And you can see those joints. I used to live in a place that had a wooden windmill.
Oh,
and
wow.
To see some of the things and say, oh, yeah, you can see the joint there. You can see why they did that. So often I'll take my engineering brain to actually have a look to see why did they make that like that?
Interesting.
These craftsmen were very good engineers back in the day.
For sure. Can you think of any sort of memorable projects that you've done with wood?
I really enjoyed making a rocking chair out of greenwood. So the trees were just cut down and it was all hand tools, axes and adzes and tools that I can't remember the name of. And we had a pole lathe. So when I said in my lathe, I've got a motor. This one hasn't got a motor. It's got a piece of string and either an elastic bungee to pull it back and a treadle. So you're pushing down on this treadle and it spins your piece of wood one way. And that's the way that you can put your blade, your chisel in. And then you have to take your chisel off as it unspins because it's going the wrong way.
Wow.
And then you put your chisel in again as it goes the other way. So it's a different skill. But yeah, making that rocking chair was great.
That's so cool. How long did that take you to make?
That was a week.
One week
in the woods.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It was all a very pre-planned course.
Nice. Okay.
And so the seat blanks had been pre-cut on a bandsaw.
Got you.
And my runners had been pre-cut on a bandsaw.
Nice.
Because otherwise it just would have taken a bit too long.
Yeah.
But all the spindles, they were either hand-turned or just drawn. So you sit on this wooden... I think it's called a horse. Yeah, wood horse. And yeah, you have a blade with two handles on and you pull towards yourself and strip the bark off this piece of wood.
Cool.
So satisfying.
That sounds super satisfying. I recently did a spoon carving workshop.
Oh, nice.
And learn how to carve wooden spoons. And I found that it made me look at wood in a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
Like actually feeling the resistance of cutting across the grain compared to how smooth it is to cut with the grain.
Yeah.
It really gives you an appreciation of the different kind of materials properties that you have in the different directions. And after going on that course, I then started sort of venturing out into the woods to try and find some like wood to start carving on my own. And it changed the way that I was looking at trees because trees in themselves are kind of just natural objects, but then you don't often think of that as a material resource. I really liked it as a sort of exercise in kind of just identifying materials opportunities, I suppose.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So you know on a tree, a burr, where it's all gnarled, knotty, and a branch has come off years ago, and it's just got this big lump of probably where the bit of rot's got in, and it's if you use that in wood turning, it's beautiful stuff. It's hard to turn, but it's actually beautiful, and you can see all the knots and the end grain. And so yeah, I go drooling over bits of burr that's still on the tree.
Nice. Do you regularly take to the woods with a hacksaw and go and collect pieces?
Just no. But the other thing I really enjoyed doing with wood was I learned to rub two sticks together to make fire.
Nice.
That was a fun job.
Yeah.
Well, it took a long time.
Good life skill.
For me to actually get the knack of that. Yes, I discovered I wasn't breathing when I was doing it, which is why I kept feeling faint.
Why not? Too much concentration.
Yeah. Oh, I'm holding my breath. I'm going to do this. Breathe.
Amazing. Here's a question for you. If you had unlimited time and unlimited resources, what is like your holy grail of something to make?
Oh, unlimited time and unlimited skill. Let's go.
Okay, yeah.
I think the first thing that springs to mind is a boat of some sort, but I get horrendously seasick when I'm on a bigger boat than anything bigger than a kayak. So I would love to make a Canadian canoe from silver birch, the Native Americans would have made. That would really be something nice.
That's cool
to do.
Well, who knows, if there's a second lockdown, maybe that'll be your opportunity.
UK silver birch isn't thick enough. You have to go to the Nordic countries to actually get thick silver birch.
Fair enough.
Not that I've researched it at all. No, never.
I have absolutely no doubt that you will achieve this goal at some point soon. I'd like to return to this idea of being a maker, mm-hmm. and sort of, you know, just then I was talking about kind of how it changes how you look at the world. What does being a maker mean to you?
Never saying no. It means anything can be fixed, or anything can be bodged together or remade. And I know there are limits on that for the electronics. And nowadays you can't fix a car quite the way that you used to be able to fix a car. To me, it's the can-do attitude. How do we do this? Let's do it. Oh, it can't be done that way. Let's do it another way. So it's the creativity of looking around and looking through, and just the ability to use your hands. I get twitchy if I haven't used my hands for a while.
Is it something innate, or is this something that anyone can learn how to do?
I'm not sure. I love it. My brother doesn't seem to. Mm. And we were brought up pretty similar, doing the same sort of things. Mm. So I think, yeah, there might be if you want to do it, you'll do it more. And if it doesn't appeal, if you've got two left hands and you stab yourself with the scissors every time you use them, maybe making isn't for you.
I'm just thinking, though, that, you know, you've spoken so kind of enthusiastically about what making is to you. If someone's listening to this and they're not crafty, but they'd quite like to be, have you got any advice for people that are looking to get into that sort of thing?
There's all sorts of things that you can try. I mean, there's so many different types of making, from the paper engineering of making automata, just folding paper, or origami. There's the knitting, the sewing. There's the many crafts that we already have, probably tried somewhere in our childhood. And then lino cuts, and anything that's slightly arty can become makering, paper mache, for example. You know, all these things are making. And for me, I obviously like the putting the technical with the old crafts, but I haven't yet put electronics into any wood turned items.
Ah, interesting.
It can be done, but for me, a lot of it is, no, this is pure wood. I like that in a thing. This is pure electronic geeks. I like that in a thing. Putting the two together may not go. But going back to play school and getting the kitchen roll tubes and a box of tissues and making that into a thing, making a robot out of the tinfoil eyes or whatever, that's also making. So there's no limit to what it is or what you can start with. For me, the biggest thing is giving yourself permission. Give yourself permission to make. And I have to do it still, I should be writing that email, or I should be putting the washing on, or I should be da 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 da. And it's like, no, I should be playing with my materials, playing with clay, play with whatever it is that you fancy.
I've come to craft and making quite late in life, I think. I suppose because I've in academically been channeled down this very scientific route. I always kind of felt that I pigeonholed myself as a science person and not an arts person. And it's only been in the last couple of years, kind of through looking at materials and speaking to people like yourself and people through the podcast, that actually it's not. That's an imaginary barrier, right? But it does take a little bit of self-confidence to go, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to try and learn this skill, or I'm going to put some creativity into the world. But it's incredibly rewarding as well.
Yeah. And there's so many things that we don't label as making, but are decorating your house. You might make your curtains, making a recipe or making a meal, and you haven't quite got all the ingredients for the recipe, and so you change something and you swap something in or out. All these things are just the same creative making. What have we got and what can we make with it?
You mentioned robots earlier, and I just wanted to ask you about Robot Wars really quickly. Because Robot Wars was one of my favourite shows as a kid. But I always looked at it and I thought, like, wow, that's such an incredibly, what I thought was kind of like a really complicated thing to do. Like, I can't imagine ever knowing how to build a robot like that. But then there's all these kind of ordinary people doing it in their garden sheds and stuff. So how do you think, or how have you seen, actually, through your role with Robot Wars, people making that leap and finding the confidence to go out there and make stuff?
For particularly the robot competition, there are different leagues, might be the word, where you can start with smaller robots and work your way up.
Okay.
So the ones we saw on TV were the heavyweights. And they were huge. They really were. You don't get the impression. Three of us could fit in that pit.
Oh, really?
Three judges. There's a photo of the three judges in the pit. It's a huge thing. And you start with, okay, can I make a remote control car? Can I make something that goes forward and backwards? Okay, that works. Okay, can I put some shielding on? And you do it step by step. there's a competition called Pi Wars, where they take Raspberry Pi computers, which are £30 computers designed initially for education, but now there's millions of them out there in the wild. And you can actually buy a kit. And so you can compete in Pi Wars at the entry level and then look at everybody else's and say, oh, next year I'm going to put that kind of wheel on, or I'm going to put that kind of sensor on. And then it evolves. So it's all an evolution, really. And yeah, there are some big and scary tools, welding, using the Hardox metal. I like wood because I can do it, you know. And if a bit of wood falls on my steel toe cap toe, I'm okay. if a bit of Hardox fell on my toe cap toe, I'm not quite convinced that what will come off worse. So it's I'm a bit scared of all these big metal things. There are the safety precautions. There's PPE. I think I've got too many P's in that. and yeah, it's all done. I was very surprised at how safely everyone did. I shouldn't say surprised. Impressed.
Yeah.
I was impressed because I hadn't – some of the safety considerations they had, I hadn't considered before I got there.
Interesting.
And to see them in the pits, working on them is amazing. Because I actually joined a team afterwards.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah, and started working on one and thinking, they're – some of the engineering that's gone into it. I mean, it was one of the more technical engineering challenged robots, which is what I liked. But then it's like, but they're still held together with nuts and bolts.
Yeah. So just to wrap up then, what's next for you? What have you got in the pipeline? Any exciting projects?
Oh, I'm doing another series of the Engineering Edge podcast. So that's where I talk to people around the world who are using an everyday technology component in a slightly different way or for a slightly different purpose that's giving them an edge in their business.
Okay.
So in the last series, I spoke to a theme park that were using Raspberry Pis in their robot dinosaurs. I spoke to Fusion Energy, where they were using hard drives that we use in our computers to store 40 years worth of fusion energy data. I'm looking forward to recording the next one of that. The Design Spark podcast, the comedy tech podcast that I've done, that's series 3, we've finished recording that. That one's out now. So I'm enjoying that. And I'm also writing I've just had the dog start snoring behind me. She's obviously heard this far too many times. I've also started writing the Don't Speak Geek, Communication Skills for Engineers book.
Oh, wow, cool.
So, I'm getting into that.
Amazing. I'll look forward to reading that. So if people have enjoyed hearing from you and they'd like to look you up online, where can they find your stuff?
I'm on Twitter as @ Dr. Lucy Rogers, and my web is lucyrogers.com.
That's easy. is there anything else you'd like to talk about before we sign off?
Oh, just give me all the wood.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
It's been great to find other people who are interested in the materials and sharing my passion. It's always good fun.
So that was the marvellous Lucy Rogers. I can't thank her enough for coming on the podcast and for speaking so passionately about handmaking. That's all for this episode. As always, I'd be so grateful if you could rate and review the podcast over on Apple Podcasts. Thanks to everyone who has continued to support us by giving a one-time donation. If you're enjoying the podcast and you have the means and the inclination to do so, you can go and make a one-time donation, which is at supporter.acast.com/handmade. Say hi to us online. I always love hearing from people and hearing that they've been enjoying the podcast. On Twitter, we're at Real Talk. That's RIAL Talk. And on Instagram, we're at Handmade Pod. Let me know what episodes from the archive you've been enjoying listening to this week, as well as this awesome episode from Lucy. As always, a huge thank you to Dave Shepherd for our marvellous cover art and to Alex Lathbridge for the music mix. That's everything for this week. Next week, I've got a really, really special treat for you. It's tasty. There's actually more than one guest. And if I'm completely honest, I think there's probably going to be a bit of a food fight. So until then, thanks for listening. Take care, and I'll see you next time on Handmade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.